a big series between the Brewers and the Cubs, yet they're both looking up as this weekend starts at the St. Louis Cardinals. He follows the Cubs. He covers the Cubs for 670 The Score, our sister station in Chicago. You can hear him Sunday mornings on Hit and Run, a program that is only better when I come on. Matt Spiegel joins us. Spiegs, how are you?
I'm good. I was listening to that highlight, as you mentioned, and realizing, aren't we both lucky that we don't have to listen to Mike Shannon do play-by-play of games? I mean, he was completely bored by the fact that the Cardinals were about to beat the Cubs and take two out of three and announce themselves in first place here on the 2nd of August. My goodness. But that's not why you called.
Well, if we had a one-hitter against the team in Milwaukee, we'd probably have a parade the next day, as it would be one of the top five achievements that this organization has ever had. And before we get into the Cubs, I want to get your perspective on, like, if you were talking to a Brewers audience, because what I've been upset with their lack and their inability to go and get any pitching and pay anything of any kind, whether it's prospects or money. What you see with them on the offense is they'll go get Mike Moustakas. They'll go get Yasmani Grandal. They'll get creative with that. They'll go and trade for Christian Yelich. They'll go and pay for Lorenzo Cain. So it seems like on offense, all options are on the table, but they just will not pull the trigger on pitching in any way. And I've been upset with the GM this week. I've been upset with the ownership this week. How do you try to tell Brewers fans that everything's okay when clearly, Spiegel, it's not?
Well, I couldn't tell you that everything is okay because your window arrived. It arrived two off seasons ago. It was pretty clear that that was a moment, and everyone was waiting for the Brewers to make their move on either Jake Arrieta or Yu Darvish or someone of consequence in that market. It didn't happen. Then a trade deadline comes, and it still doesn't happen. Then another offseason comes, and it still doesn't happen. Now, there is, and in fact, I let Wade Miley go, there is this glut of interesting young arms, including Peralta, who's now in the bullpen, and guys like Burns, who are coming back, and Woodruff on the injured list. There's a glut of interesting arms, and there's a tremendous amount of creativity in counsel and the management staff on how to use them. So that has got to give you some confidence, I understand, but to watch assets get hurt over and over and to watch other teams pick up bigger pitchers of consequence at the deadline and with money, no, I'd be frustrated as well. This division, which everyone has been saying is you know, was going to be the best one in baseball, I'm still waiting for a team, any team, to step up and say, you know what, we're the really good one. We're the one that's going to win 95 games, hell, 92 games, 88, 89 games wins, might win this division this year, and it's insane. The Cardinals did nothing, did absolutely nothing, 3 years without making the playoffs, and they did nothing at the deadline. It's insane. So at least the Brewers did a little bit. I think it's smart to give up on Jesus Aguiar and move on and get what you can with this guy with Faria out of Tampa. But, you know, Drew Pomerantz is a step above Derek Holland in terms of what the Giants were willing to give up. And I am surprised to see the Brewers and the Cardinals both not do more to step up and grab this division, which is waiting for someone to step up and take it.
Matt, what were your thoughts on the Cubs' deadline moves? They didn't have to part ways, really, with anybody on the big league club. I mean, outside of Carl Edwards Jr., who just really couldn't figure things out. What were your thoughts on their moves at the deadline?
Carl Edwards Jr. has been toast for 2 years. He gave up postseason home runs to Bryce Harper. He's been broken, and it's been really obvious, and it's been incredibly upsetting to watch how long they've given him the confidence and the leash to try and get it back together. It wasn't going to happen. I was actually pretty damn impressed when you think about the fact that they let their young assets decay in terms of trade value, like Addison Russell's a triple A, Albert Almora is a defensive replacement, Kyle Schwarber is not Babe freaking Ruth. He's useful. He's definitely useful, but he's, you know, so those guys, and Ian Happ was at the minus for part of the year, so they couldn't deal those guys. They have financial constraints from the ownership. Say what you want about them, but that is true that that's what they have, and they've done a terrible job of drafting, so they're farm system is like bottom five. All that being said, they added five pieces. They paid money for Kimbrel. They added Alugi and Holland, who was used incorrectly last night. You saw what happened, gave up a three-run homer to Wieters. Added a guy in Phelps, who hopefully will take innings away from Brad Brock, who's been a disaster. And they went out and get Castellanos, which is exactly the kind of bat they need. They might have needed two of them, but essentially with all those constraints, and then Tony Kemp as a utility guy to play second, play a little backup center, play a little left, be a contact guy at the back of the order of the lineup. They added five pieces with all those constraints. So they found a way to go for it. It didn't really affect them for next year and 2021, which would be the final 2 years of the window. So I was pretty impressed.
And when you look at next year, and you bring up Kyle Schwarber, Addison Russell, it was just crazy how the Cubs won, because they won. They were so young, and they won quicker than we thought they were with the World Series. And now guys just really haven't got any better, like with Kyle Schwarber, Addison Russell. So do you think this is kind of a World Series or bust year, not only for Joe Maddon, but for a couple of these guys on the big league club, like Addison Russell? Well, Addison Russell's pretty much done, but Kyle Schwarber and, you know, some of those names, Almora and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, I think it's World Series or bust for the entire rest of the winning window here. After 21, these are the guys who are free agents. Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, Contreras, Epstein. Okay, those are the guys, and they'll have to make some big decisions on which of those players to pay, and Theo's done. Theo will move on and try to rescue the Democratic Party. Or Theo will move on and try to rescue Paramount Studios. I don't know. Whatever the next big challenge is. Or he'll take over and try to make the commissioner's office more likable and sensible at the same time. I mean, Theo is his challenge has been great. He will go to the Hall of Fame as the guy who broke curses in Boston and Chicago. It's pretty astounding. But they're scrambling to keep things afloat in a league where everybody's caught up. There's no sucker at the table anymore. Dave Stewart isn't in Arizona anymore. You know, they got rid of Duquette. Dan Duquette is gone from Baltimore. You know, like Jim Duquette. You pick a Duquette, any Duquette. They're like, everybody's smart now everywhere. And the market inefficiencies that they used to find are not really there. And if anything, the Cubs have been passed now by organizations like the Astros and the Dodgers and the Braves in terms of how they develop and how they cultivate, how they think about pitching, and how they think about attacking trends around the game. So these entire 3 years are World Series or bust, and then God knows what happens to this team after that.
Talking with Matt Spiegel, 670 The Score, Brewers-Cubs this weekend. You know, you bring up about how everybody is caught up to the Brewers, and Ken Rosenthal wrote a piece this week, and it kind of spoke to me, because I analytics are good. I'm not somebody who shakes my fist at numbers and stuff. But
there's a butt coming.
There is. I think that, and I'm going to say a different word, but. However, what I'm like...
That changes it.
Sometimes, even though bunts are terrible, there's still, you can feel within a game like, they should probably bunt here. Or hit and run, you know, maybe it's not as used as it used to be. You should probably do that here. And I think that we've seen on the field the shifting and the no bunting and the strikeout homer or bust. We've seen the numbers really take it over on the field. And now we're seeing it off the field. Like, you can't. Maybe the reason the trade deadline is so what it is because you can't find guys anymore. Everybody knows. Everybody's got the same numbers. Everybody's smart now. Everybody uses the same stuff on the field and off the field. And I think that, you know, I don't know if baseball's worse because of it, but it seems like it's becoming less fun.
Yeah, no, I think there's some truth to that. The way that John Shambi put it to me, God, a couple years ago, is the way that I always think about it, which is that baseball has evolved to the point where the most efficient way to win a game is not the most entertaining way to play the game, period. You know, so it's like guys just trying to swing over the shifts and do their thing and hit the homers is not the most entertaining way to play. They're asking everybody with two strikes, then adjust and become Anthony Rizzo and have the ability to place the ball into left field and have the ability to, you know, hit on top of the baseball as opposed to trying to hit under the baseball for your first two strikes. It's insane. So when a guy like Tony Kemp comes, who's got an OPS, you know, in his career of like no better than 740, that kind of thing. But, oh, look at that. He's got an 82% contact rate. It's like, thank God, there's somebody who's just going to maybe make contact every once in a while and not kill a rally, you know? So yeah, there's definitely that in there. And, I'll say this. In terms of what a market inefficiency might be, you've got a lot of people predicting and hoping, whether it's Dale Murphy writing last week about it or Justin Verlander talking at the All-Star break about it, that it's going to come back around to contact guys and the singles hitters and slap hitters that you need in that lineup. It used to be that you had one or two at the top and probably one or two at the bottom, and then your boppers were in the middle to do their thing. Now everybody's being asked to do everything. Maybe it will come back around. Until they get paid for it, I don't know that there's impetus for guys to learn to do things that way or to perfect those skills. But certainly managers like it, a lot of managers like it. Joe Maddon, when this offense, which has been struggling, 3 runs, by the way, in St. Louis, is not enough to win more than one game, I don't believe, over 3 games. Maddon says, oh, the way to spark the offense, a little more hit and run, a little more aggressiveness, get guys going. Try to hit it the opposite way even more. And you try to get that message across. But dudes love when they hit home runs, and dudes get paid for hitting home runs. So it's difficult. This is why, this stuff that you're talking about, Bart, is why some of the smartest people in the game are willing to embrace some of the rule changes that feel insane, like the 3-batter rule for a relief pitcher. There are a lot of smart front office guys who are like, you know what? Yes. Because that's going to bring more contact late in games. It's going to bring more balls in play late in games. It's going to reduce the over-strategizing in late innings. So you will, I think, see a lot more teams willing to side with the commissioner in trying to make some of these changes to try and make the game a bit more fun.
Man, I love Joe Maddon as the manager of a young team. I think he's a great player manager. All of his players love him, obviously, you know. But do you feel like his message has kind of grown tired with some of these guys?
Yes, I think it definitely has. I think that he's been asked to be more hands-on, and he has been more hands-on. I think that there are actually a lot of veterans who dig him, and it's not gotten as bad and as disconnected as, say, Terry Francona in his and Theo's final year in Boston, as I am forever comparing that run to this one, as I think about the decay there and the potential decay here or not. So it hasn't gotten quite that bad. But the message is one thing. Then there's the fact that Joe struggles to do the things that he actually wants to do before the game, once the game begins. It was last weekend in Milwaukee. He told us all he wasn't going to use Pedro Strop in that game on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then he used Pedro Strop, who blew up again on Friday. He told us on Saturday, basically, that Rowan Wick was going to get the eighth inning. And then Steve Cishek got the eighth inning and blew up. And Cishek, after the game, then said that was his spot, absolutely his spot. That is not at all what Joe said before the game. And it takes me back to seventh game panic when they won in spite of him in Cleveland to win a World Series in 2016. So, you know, There are elemental strategic things that enrage Joe's bosses and have for a long time. So, look, all of that is added in and added together, and is why he didn't get offered an extension before the year. It's why this is the final year of his contract, and I've actually been resolute on that for the past couple of years, telling people that Joe's not going to get another deal. And people are like, what the hell are you talking about? They're done. They're ready. If David Ross were available, he would have been the manager at some point this year, but he's not for some reasons, personal and professional. I suspect it'll be David Ross next year, but we'll see.
Interesting. Matt Spiegel, 670 on Twitter. Spiegs, appreciate it. We will talk soon.
All right, man. Appreciate it, Bart. Thank you much.
Matt Spiegel joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common-sense lending to your community since 1935.